Hello and welcome to Cyber Sound Bites, the podcast that explores how best to protect yourself, your family and friends online. We'll also keep you updated on the latest cyber threats whilst taking a deeper dive into subjects such as social media use, the dark web and online gaming. I'm Claire Chambers and this time we're talking all about the importance of cybersecurity training. Jake Morris is Head of Cyber Awareness Behaviours and Culture at Defence Digital and leads on training and development across the organisation. I asked him to explain exactly what he does.
So a big part of my role is looking at two aspects of training, one of them being the mandated front. I know that can get a bit of reaction sometimes and eyes can roll when you mention mandated training, but I'll go into it in a heck of a lot more detail soon. The second part is having a look at what's available and what's out there and how can we start to take some of this material and deliver it in a completely different way and the correct use of gamification in training to help that knowledge stick, and as well as that so people can actually use that on a day-to-day basis rather than just, I've done it, I'm trained, fantastic.
Okay, and I love the idea of making this training more interesting because I don't want to offend you. I know cybersecurity is like your job.
No, it's fine. But offend away because it's very... I know exactly where this is going.
Sitting through those training, like a presentation sometimes, yes, can be a little bit boring. What ways are you making it more interesting then?
So I'll start with the why it's boring aspect first before I get onto that, because it's such an interesting point and it never offends me because as someone who looks at mandated training and compliance, training for the sake of compliance, I really, really don't agree with. It is one of those premises of, if I have done this training, if anything happens, therefore I'm all good. I've done my training. It wasn't me. It wasn't my fault. I get why there is a need for that. And I get why the structure is in place. I come from a very, very specific education and training background. And even for myself going through mandated training, I can call back to a health and safety brief to do with using ladders, fire extinguishers, slip strips and falls, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that there are people out there nodding along going, oh, yep. The only thing I remembered from that was about fire extinguishers because it applied to my day-to-day role specifically. Because at the end of the day, if I am trained to use a ladder, fine. Am I still going to stand on a chair if I need to get something? Probably. Should I? Probably not. So when we look at mandated training, I think there's a few things to unpack. One, how relevant is it to that person? Two, because we all learn in different ways, it's hard to try and encompass all of that. And as well as that, if you are just saying, do this because said so, if you're not really fully understanding or appreciating some of the nuances around it, you're just going to do it and forget it.
Yeah.
So the premise behind gamification in training is to be able to take that material and drip feed that through a longer time span. Because in the space of a year, and especially with cybersecurity, probably less than a year actually, things are constantly changing and adapting. And people need to keep informed and keep up to date and know what to do with this information. Obviously, cybersecurity for some is an afterthought, which is fine, because if you are logging in, doing a 9-to-5 and not really thinking about it, of course, it's not your biggest priority. Whatever you've got on your plate at the time is. However, if the materials that we're talking about when it comes to training of cybersecurity, like passwords or phishing, all of a sudden cybersecurity does become a big core part of your day-to-day without realizing. So what we can do is rather than, there's your training, you are now trained for the year.
Mm-hmm.
If we change the approach to gamification in training, and start to think, how can I drip feed this in once a month? If I was to do 5 or 10 minutes per month across a span of different modules and think of it more 80% game, 20% learn, if we start to shift towards that model, I think there's going to be a lot more benefit to be had in what I can do with this information once I've learned it.
Definitely. It's one of those things as well, when you're not doing it or practicing it constantly, although you've done the training, it can just, you just kind of forget about it. It goes to the back of your head and then you get caught out by a link or something that you shouldn't have clicked on because that training was so long ago. So I like the idea of like this monthly drip feed of the games as well, which makes it way more interactive and way more memorable as well. So what sort of games have we got that we can kind of play, and how are you making it more exciting?
So we've got a couple of things in the works at the moment, and one of the bits of research that we've looked across is embedding the use of types of games in learning has to be done very carefully. If everyone is doing a training course with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style questions around these topics, it's going to get boring very quickly. So what we've had a look at on the research side of things is, rather than embedding individual games, trying to shift the whole thing into a game. So I could go through the modules and say, this is what you need to learn. By the end of it, this is what the skill set you need to have, or what you need to be aware of. And chances are, if that's the same thing every year, you're just going to write down the answers in a little book and then refer back to those the next time you have to do the quick assessment.
Yeah.
To power through, which I will admit I have done before.
Same.
But that's the thing. If I remember that knowledge and I've just got that written down in the back of a book, has the course achieved what you want it to, but have people actually learnt the thing? Kind of, I suppose. So the gamification element, rather than just taking those old school Java click online games, is to framework the whole training course within a story. So narrative-led learning. Rather than me telling you, this is what you need to know about passwords, and going, yep, sure, I understand that, but I'm not going to go and change all of my passwords because that's a pain. What we can start to do is build a narrative where you as the user have an interaction with a mentor, so an, in quotation marks, an expert, and they will deliver the information to you on this is why it matters and this is why it's important. As part of that gamification, narrative-based learning, is that you are then presented with a situation to go and fix. Because for the most part, contrary to popular belief, most people want to help everyone. Whether you've got time, whether the situation presents itself, whatever. Naturally, we lean towards helping others. So what we can do is then say, okay, there is a situation, there is an individual, and they've had their password compromised, or they feel that they're using too many passwords and have approached you and said, can I have the best advice? From that information that you have learnt through this story and being able to tell someone that this is what you need to do and this is why you need to do it, a part of that could be identifying the strongest and weakest passwords out of, say, a list of five. Put them in order for me. People have a better understanding when given an example and then how they can use that. And if we are able to learn how to, even on a basic level, just explain the premise in a nutshell, so to speak, in 30 seconds to someone, we're more likely to remember that and then apply it later on.
Yeah.
So really using that narrative story to take someone through a journey of, here's problems, try and solve them, but in a slightly different way.
Yeah, and actually doing it, I always find helps
concrete
it into the memory rather than, yeah, as you say, clicking a button. Oh, I answered that last year. I'll just click that button again. Now, before you do what you do now, you were a teacher for a couple of years in a primary school. I can kind of hear that coming through. How does it how does it translate teaching teenagers to training adults?
Yeah, so I was a teacher for 9 years in a product design and engineering space, all the way from basically 11 to 18-year-olds. I suppose getting people to understand things and how people learn doesn't really change. Our attitudes and thoughts and sentiments towards learning may differ. However, I've explained mandatory training to adults and you get a very similar reaction as you do to young adults of, I don't want to do it just because you're telling me. So there are some things that transcend across that space. But there was always one thing that really drew me towards training, development, learning, all of that kind of space. And it's boring to some, but it really sits true with me. Is what I've always described as that light bulb moment. When something clicks for someone, or that premise really sinks in and people get the value of that, that for me is at the core part of why people like myself do what we do. Having someone sat in front of me or interacting with one of our materials, regardless of whether they're 12 or 58, whatever, regardless of that, sat there going, ah, right, okay, I get this. I can now go and do that thing to the best of my ability with the materials given. And that is a core part that runs throughout just education in general. Plus, I've got an awful attention span. I really struggle with written language and absorbing that information.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone like myself that's really struggled in that space, being able to generate these materials and think of a different way of approaching it to help everyone in that space, regardless of whether you've got those issues or not, I think can only benefit people.
Absolutely. We all learn differently. So it's so nice to hear that you're open to that and just finding the best way for people to learn and absorb this information. Now, gamification is one way that you're doing this training. Social engineering is another way. Can you tell us what that is and how you use it?
Yes. This is also another fun part of my job. So social engineering, at its core premise, is the ability to gain access to information through subterfuge without someone realizing. So as we've spoken before around phishing, for example, the social engineering aspect there is being able to build a template or a message or an email or something that could be sent, text, phone call, whatever it may be, being able to gain that person's information for benefit for nefarious reasons. Now, that's all well and good. I'm not going to go around stealing people's credit card information, though, because that's wrong. But what we can use is social engineering as a training tool to steer people in the right direction. So rather than just sending a phishing email and saying, hey, you clicked on it, you got it wrong, now go do this 20-minute training course. We've heard examples of this in industry where if you click on a phishing email, you have to go to that course and your line manager goes with you. If you line manage a team of 20 and they all click on it, you can imagine how that week's going to go for people. So what we use in the training space, and it's not a course, it's not a mandated thing, it's not a module, the elements of gamification in training is to say to people, okay, we're going to send you something, you've clicked on it, it's going to pop up with a message and say, hey, you got this wrong, don't worry, this is a sandbox, it's a safe space for you to get this wrong, here's the things you need to look out for. And what we will do is run that again and slide the difficulty around and hopefully look for that developing trend. So the gamification element and the training element around social engineering, whether that's a phishing email or going on site and asking someone to do something risky, we are presenting someone with an opportunity to practice those skills, get it wrong, work on what's already good, or demonstrate what is already really, really good behavior in that sense. So whenever I talk about training, it's not just about sat there doing your courses. It's about interacting with a whole bunch of materials in a different way to equip people to do better.
Yeah. And I kind of guess whilst you were in a dream world, no one would get caught out with these things, but that would put you out of a job. And the whole thing is constantly developing. There's always new ways that cyber criminals are trying to get information. How do you stay on top of all of that?
That's a tough one. I suppose for us, it's keeping the finger on the pulse of what's going on out there. So things like AI and large language models, being nerdy, and most people are in our team are, is how do we start to look at all of those elements and think, how can that affect day-to-day life? So this is kind of where the social engineering mindset plays in, is if I was bad, how could I take those things and do something with it? Okay, now I understand that. How can we flip that, reverse engineer, and go back down the line and say, how can we tell people what to look out for? If I'm posting a whole bunch of stuff on social media, maybe a little bit too much for my own good, I am presenting essentially an open door to all of my information about my life. If someone's then going to try and get some information out of me through the use of social engineering, they're going to find common ground. They're going to look for all of these bits of information that makes me a friendly face. I know a lot about the things that you do, therefore you're more likely to trust me. Or I know the basic information to fill out a fraudulent credit card application, I'm just going to need a few bits so I can then start to delve down those things and look for patterns.
I guess especially if you're putting a lot onto social media, a cyber criminal might be able to see what you're interested in and then hook you in that way, going, oh, I know they're probably going to click on this link because they're interested in this because they've been posting about it, and you've given out information which is actually just helping those people out, which is, it's quite a tough one to manage that.
It is, because you can't tell people what to do and what not to do. That kind of goes against pretty much everything, but it's making sure that people understand the impact. You can't lock down everyone's socials and say, you can't tell anyone about anything because that'd be boring, wouldn't it? Sure, it'd make my life easier, but but I think it's more about how that links to our cybersecurity behaviours. So if you look at physical security, for example, posting, yep, I'm on a plane and I'm going away for 2 weeks to this lovely location, sure, that's fine, that's fantastic. If people know where you live, or if that catches wind of nefarious actors, you may get broken into. You're increasing those odds. And it's the same thing with cybersecurity. If you are someone who is building your passwords around personal interests, whether that be a pet's name, a football team, because we are creatures of habit, mm-hmm. and we will always try and find the quickest and most efficient way to something. That's just a core part of human behaviour. But if all of the things that I am basing my passwords on is sprawled across my Instagram, again, you are just increasing the chances. And it's funny that you mentioned there about, you know, doing myself out of a job if everyone does the right thing. I think for me, when it comes to a lot of security matters, you're never going to get a zero result. I think that's quite tricky. And like you said, where everything's kind of shifting and changing, I think that's more the case, it's more prevalent now than it has ever been. I think what we can do is just make sure that people understand that it's about reducing that risk. And if we can get as close to zero as possible, then fantastic. Mm. But you were also, you know, talking on the topic of passwords. If someone's going to go, what, am I going to have 20 passwords for 20 different accounts? That's incredibly difficult to remember. And I'm probably going to write them down, which is probably not best.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's password managers. There's having sort of context clues for yourselves when using things like the three-word phrases type thing. There are these little hints and tips that you can just drip feed into your day-to-day that will make it easier to implement those.
Yeah. How do you research the audience, the people at MOD, to make it the most engaging and like to really get them on board when you're doing the training?
So for us, it's about that user experience. And obviously surveys are a big part of this. There are issues around surveys like survey fatigue, response percentages and all that kind of good stuff. And that will give you the quantitative information. That will tell you how many people, if answering honestly, agree, disagree, what they think towards a certain topic. For us in the training space, it is more about having those face-to-face group interactions. Face-to-face obviously being online or in person, wherever the situation facilitates. But for us, it's making sure that we can test run what we have done. Okay. So with the gamification narrative-led research, it was about going out to people and saying, hey, this is the kind of framework that we want to build. This is the kind of story that we want to build as part of this. What do you think? And during that process, we had several groups interact with our research team there to go, yep, I agree with this. I disagree with that. I'm not sure how I feel about that. And they wonderfully built this into sort of a guidance framework on how this could be done better through the voices of people that are going to be using it. I think that's the most important part, is not just understanding the users, but taking those things on board.
Yeah. Okay. And also, if you get one of those surveys, please fill it in, because it's so obviously so helpful to you and staying on top of this. And actually, it benefits you as a survey, someone who's filling it in. It will benefit you in the long run, because it might make the training more engaging and more fun when you've got to get around to doing it. So as you said, you do the training, kind of drip feed the training throughout the month. What are the benefits of staying on top of the latest cybersecurity issues that you can be covering?
So at the moment, it is very much a space of it's a one and done course. We're looking to shift towards that narrative led, and we've started to put bits of that within the modules. The benefits of keeping on top of these things, as I've kind of alluded to before, we're not looking for people to be cybersecurity experts. It's an unreasonable request. And as I said, people have got so many other things on their plate that are far more important to them, which is absolutely fine. What we're looking for, and the real benefit of engaging with this kind of training, is, again, reducing that risk personally, whether that is to do with work information or whether that's to do with access to your bank accounts at home. The real benefit towards engaging with this is having enough in your back pocket that you get that little feeling in the back of your neck that says, something's not right. Whether you know down to the wire what a VPN does for your information, whether that is what you're posting online or making sure that your phone is up to date, all of those kind of things is just having a little bit of each module of information, so to speak, having that in your back pocket ready to go if you need it. And if you can't remember, if you can't access that, having somewhere where you can go back and just quickly brush up on your knowledge. So not saying, oh, it's been 6 months, you have to do this. It's, you've now done it, great. We're moving towards this space where we can do it little and often. However, here's almost the cheat sheet from what you've learned.
Yeah.
Have that easily accessible, print it out, put it as your a picture on your desktop, I don't know, whatever. but always know where that is if you need it to refer back to.
Yeah, absolutely. If someone was sat there going, okay, this training is not for me, I think it's going to be an absolute chore, how would you persuade someone to convince them that it is relevant and it is going to be fun?
Ooh, tricky one. Well, if it's mandated, you don't have a choice. I think that was one of the that was a bit of feedback we've got recently. You know, if it's mandated, I have to do it. So,
yeah.
And again, I get it. There is a lot of mandated training out there. More and more has been built up over the years, and I think this spans a lot of organizations and companies in general. I suppose the thing for me is the fact that this is something that affects your day-to-day life at work and at home. So if, again, I'll focus on passwords because it's just the easiest one to pick out of the bunch. But if you say to someone, make sure that, you know, your password's secure at work, everyone's going to go, yeah. If you turn around and say, here is how you build a better password so people don't have access to your work, your banking information, your Facebook account, all of those kind of things, that one small change is going to help reduce that risk. So for us across the board, I'm trying to convince people that this is why the training matters. There are those wider aspects of work life, home life, but they're just small bits of information. If you boil down each of those modules, there are maybe 4 or 5 key points that we want people to know. And just having those at the ready will just make life a lot better for people, really.
Mm, yeah. And I guess one of the benefits of doing the training monthly instead of every 6 months or every year, actually, you know the answers because they're fresher in your mind, so you're going to get through that training a whole lot quicker as well. So there are so many benefits to staying on top of it and doing
Absolutely.
It more often.
And the reason we want to move to that space is, at the moment, if people have done it, if they want to refer back to it, they can. We're building that in as we speak, but that little and often kind of approach means as well that if the landscape does shift and does change and a new bit of tech comes out or something becomes a developing trend, we can very quickly alter that to make sure that it is on, you know, the forefront of people's mind of, oh, yeah, I remember seeing this in the news. I remember there being a big talk about this. There's a huge piece, it's slightly off topic, but there's a huge piece around AI art and the usage, you know, versus content creators.
Mm.
If something like that was to spring up as a big part of a conversation and people want to know more or how it affects them, we can start to drop that in. So it's definitely something we want to move more towards, as the current situation is, if you've done the course, you'll only know about those updates if you go back. So we're starting to try and implement a social aspect of it so people can go back and keep up to date on those things.
How often does the landscape change? Like, how often are you thinking people really should stay up to date because this new way of getting your information has come through? I mean, AI is obviously developing at quite a rapid rate and there's not the biggest controls over it at the moment. Is that a big concern? Mm.
To a degree, yes. And as someone who's paid to do training stuff, I don't think it all centres around training. So a lot of what the team works on the awareness side, on the intervention side, is saying, okay, who can pick up what in the best possible way that will make it quick and easy to get to someone? So if we're starting to see a developing trend in behaviour based on something that has come out a while ago, that's for the interventions team to go get after. If this is something that we need people to refresh themselves every year, that'll be the training space. If it's something that's just popped up, it's becoming a big thing and it's kind of growing legs and everyone's talking about it, that would fit with the awareness team on building that campaign out to address that quick and fast.
Now, what are your top tips to stay cyber secure at work?
I think it's just keeping informed. For me, it's, yes, there is the training aspect to it. Yes, you know, we've got a wide range of awareness materials for people to engage with the cyber confident work. And, you know, keep an eye out for phishing exercises landing in people's inboxes. It is just staying informed and making those small changes and how much of a difference that can make. Setting yourself little key phrases in your head that you can build a password matrix from, or the next time you go to post about something, just think, not do I need to post about this, but what if someone sees this? It's just stopping having that little question in the back of your head before doing something and slowing that process down will help the chances of something bad happening, I suppose.
Definitely. Just stopping and thinking, I think, is a big thing. Before you post, before you click on something, just having that little moment of breather and going, actually, I don't need to rush into this. Have a little think. It looks a bit suspicious. Probably is. Let's go check with somebody else who this is their expert game. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jake. It's been really insightful, and we're going to look out for that training dropping into our inboxes and those surveys so we can stay up to date with all the latest. Thank you so much.
Marvellous. Thanks for having me.
That was Jake Morris, Head of Cyber Awareness, Behaviours and Culture at Defence Digital. Look out for more episodes in this series. You can find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find out more by emailing the team at cyberconfident@mod.gov.uk.